The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Did you watch last night? Oh, boy. So last night was night two of the second of the Democratic primary debates for the 2020 presidential nomination. And somebody tweeted to me during in the middle of the debate, so what do you think of this compared to last night? And the only thing I could come up with is different. All right, now I know yesterday I didn't start the show with a comedy bit, and I wasn't going to today either because there's so much to get through, but I got an email from Boca Brittany Summers, who I guess watched the debate as well. Now, for those of you who didn't watch it, I need to set this up because at the very end, just like they did the night before, each of the candidates got allegedly a minute for their closing statement. And, they were what they were, nothing earth-shattering. And, of course, they go in reverse order of popularity in the polls. So Joe Biden being the top polling candidate on the stage last night, he was the last one to go. And I got to say, his closing statement was a little confusing. You need to hear this before we can get to the bit so it makes sense. So here's how Joe Biden wrapped it all up.
4 more years of Donald Trump will go down as an aberration.
Yeah.
Hard to overcome the damage he's done, but we can overcome it.
Agree.
8 more years of Donald
Trump. 8 more years. Who's talking about 8 more years?
The America we know will no longer exist.
8 more years?
Everybody knows who Donald Trump is. Mm-hmm. We have to let him know who we are. We choose science over fiction. We choose hope over fear.
Yeah.
We choose unity over division.
Okay.
And we choose the idea that we can, as Americans, when we act together, do anything. This is the United States
United,
of America.
United.
When we've acted together, we have never, never, never been unable to overcome whatever the problem was.
Okay.
If you agree with me,
yeah,
go to Joe 30330 and help me in this fight.
What? Wait, go to where? Go to what?
If you agree with me, go to Joe
30330
and help me in this fight.
Go to Joe 30300? Huh?
Go to Joe 30330.
Oh. Oh!
Joe.
Okay.
30330. Go to Joe 30330.
Here are a few important suggestions for the use of your dial telephone. Before calling any number, first secure the number from your new directory. Then remove the receiver and listen for the dial tone. It sounds like this. That tone indicates everything is ready for your call. With the receiver off the hook, dial the desired number. For example, suppose you want to dial 23650.
Yeah.
Dial each numeral in this manner, pulling the dial around to the finger stop each time. Be sure to allow the dial to freely return to its normal position. And this is the ringing signal.
Joe, 30330.
Oh, oh, oh.
Joe.
Oh.
30330. Oh.
Well done, Britt. Well done. Yes, or as who said it on the chat room? Think it through in the YouTube chat room. Pennsylvania Joe 5000. Ooh. Okay, now that we got that out of the way. Okay. There is some kind of opposite world stuff going on because there were at least two opinion pieces in the New York Times that found Joe Biden won the debate. I kid you not. I couldn't make this stuff up. Really? Yeah. No. Wow. So if I had to come up with a winner for last night, it's a tough one. As I said, and I know I wasn't alone, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders won last night. They really did. They won by not being there. They won in comparison. My God, I sat here yesterday and I complained about the amateur hour-ness of the, you know, the first night's debate. This last night took it to a whole new level. Somebody's asking, okay, what's up? What did those protesters say yesterday? Good question, because I was wondering too. This is probably not the right place to start, but there was in the intros, and I'll play my little intro statement montage. I did one today, like I did yesterday, just for the hell of it. And I missed it the first time through, but at the end of Bill de Blasio's introductory statement, there was a little bit of audience disturbance, but it happened right at the end and then it stopped. But they started up again when Cory Booker was doing his opening statement, and he had to pause to let them finish or let, you know, the security people escort the protesters out. Here's what they were saying.
Last week, the president of the United States attacked an American city, calling it a disgusting, rat-infested, rodent mess. We need a nation.
So I'm listening, and it sounded to me like they're saying, fire Dan Quayle. Fire Dan Quayle. Right? Fire Dan Quayle. No, actually, they were saying, fire Pantaleo.
Please stand by.
Okay, so this happened. So I turned to David, and I'm like, it sounds like they're saying if they're saying fire Pantaleo, Pantaleo was the cop who basically murdered Eric Garner, except that was in Staten Island. That was New York, not New Jersey. Why are they doing this while Cory Booker is speaking? Well, apparently they started it during de Blasio, but they were a little late, so they just decided to chant it during Cory Booker too. I don't know. There was another point where there was chanting outbreak, and that was people chanting about the 3 million deported during the Obama administration when Joe Biden was trying to defend Obama's immigration stance. So all that happened. So we'll get to it. In fact, you know what? There's some news. Let's start before I get into the recap. And the recap might be a two-dayer, just saying, because Howie Klein will be along at the bottom of the hour, unlike yesterday's guest who just stood us up. But that's okay, because it worked out fine. But, we'll get through as much of the recap as we can, and we may continue it tomorrow. And tomorrow, John Nichols of The Nation will be here as well. He was there the last two nights for the debate, and he's one of us. He's a progressive. He understands this opposite worldness that's happening. Anyway, let's start with a look at what happened in the news today.
I read the news today. Oh,
oh boy. All right. So here's the breaking news from this morning, since I recorded the recorded version of What's News that airs all day long on the Progressive Voices Network. The Senate Judiciary Committee, this is astounding. The Senate Judiciary Committee advanced a bill this morning to overhaul U.S. asylum laws, waiving committee rules to force the legislation through over the objections from the Democrats. Of course, this was spearheaded by Lindsey Graham, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee. And what he said is, we're going to do it because I said so. Well, here, this is what happened in that in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing when Lindsey Graham decided that the rules of the Senate don't apply.
Beginning at 11 o'clock today, the clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Chairman.
Whoa.
The clerk will call the roll.
Excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
This is Dick
Durbin. Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Breaking the rules of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
He's ignoring them. Completely ignoring them.
Mr. Chairman, I've been on
this.
This is unprecedented.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. And you hear the Democrats.
Mr. Chairman, you're not
going
to respond to our request for a point of order clarification?
No, I'm not.
This is how it's going to be. Why not? What rule are you pointing to that allows you to do this?
And they're calling roll. They're calling the roll of the committee.
No.
Mr. Leahy? No.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
We'll continue the roll call, and I'll be glad to take any questions.
No. You know what that is, Lindsey Graham? That is plain and simple.
Bullshit.
Absolute bullshit. The decision by Lindsey Graham to force his bill through the committee obviously sparked outrage from the Democrats, who accused him of busting up the rules on how legislation gets taken up in order to push through a partisan bill. Here's how we got to this place. All the Democrats on the committee, except for Dianne Feinstein, skipped a business meeting last Thursday when Graham's bill was on the agenda. Under the committee rules, two members of the minority party have to be present to take up legislation or to hold it over until the next meeting. Well, only Feinstein showed up. So because Graham wasn't able to hold over the bill, the Republicans had to vote to deem it as held over, letting it bypass the panel's rules, making it eligible for a vote today. Graham defended his decision, saying he wasn't changing the rules. I am making a motion in response to what you did last week. Last week you chose not to show up. What am I supposed to do? Graham asked. The committee can't be a place where nothing happens because the House may not pass it. Total disregard for the rules of the Senate. And what would this bill do that Lindsey Graham pushed through the committee? Well, it's a bill to change the asylum laws. It would increase the number of days a family can be held together from 20 to 100, thereby, yes, preventing family separations, but lengthening the amount of time children can be held in custody, albeit with their parents. It would also require that asylum claims be filed in Mexico or a home country instead of the United States. It would provide funding for 500 new immigration judges and allow unaccompanied minors from Central America to be sent back to their home countries. What else? Oh, the Senate also passed this morning by a vote of 67 to 28 this two-year budget and debt limit deal negotiated by Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary. It was the last vote of the summer for Congress. The Senate is now on recess. In case you were wondering about all the senators running for the presidency, Kirsten Gillibrand, Michael Bennett, and Amy Klobuchar were present for the vote. Gillibrand got home fast. She voted yes. Bennett and Klobuchar voted no. Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and Cory Booker all missed the vote. And that passed. Waiving the debt ceiling, something that Republicans fight against every single time when there's a Democrat in the White House, Democrats just gave it to them for 2 years. Now, granted, we shouldn't be playing with the credit worthiness of the nation, but once again, it's
bullshit.
And finally, good old Donald Trump. Dear leader is at it again. Donald Trump went on a Twitter tirade today about his trade wars with China, and he announced that he will impose a new 10% tariff on $300 billion in Chinese imports beginning September 1st. That means that virtually everything sent to the U.S. from China will be more expensive to consumers. By the way, the stock market immediately plunged on the news. Now down, drumroll, 289 points. So far for the day. Good work, Donald. Good work. Hey, now on to the debate, shall we? All right. As I did yesterday, I didn't make many montages, but I did one just so that everybody gets time. I was chastised for not giving Beto O'Rourke enough time in my recap yesterday. I guess he said nothing that excited me, but he was included in the opening montage. Here's the one from last night.
Let's start with opening statements. You will each receive 1 minute. Mayor Bill de Blasio, please begin.
Okay.
When I'm president, we will even up the score and we will tax the hell out of the wealthy.
to make this a fairer country and to make sure it's a country that puts working people first.
See, that's
Senator Michael Bennet.
Let's end this three-ring circus in Washington. And let's make this election about reclaiming our future for our kids and our democracy. Empty promises won't beat Donald Trump. I can.
Oh, yeah.
Governor Jay Inslee.
If we make defeating the climate crisis the top priority of the United States, we will have a fighting chance to save ourselves and our children's future. It has to be our top priority.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
Oh, boy.
We need a nominee who will take on the big fights and win. We need a nominee who doesn't know the meaning of impossible.
Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard.
And as president, I'll bring this unifying spirit of love for country and the soldiers' values of service above self to the White House, truly leading a government of, by, and for the people.
Secretary Julian Castro.
I don't want us to go backward. We're not going back to the past. We're not going back where we came from. We're going to move forward. We're going to make America better than it's ever been in the years to come. Let's do that together.
Okay.
Andrew Yang.
We need to do the opposite of much of what we're doing right now, and the opposite of Donald Trump is an Asian man who likes math.
Math. What he said was math before this sound feedback got him.
Senator Cory Booker.
Math.
The call of this election is the call to unite in common cause and common purpose. That's how we will beat Donald Trump. That's how I will beat Donald Trump. And as your president, that's how I will govern and move us forward together.
He spoke very haltingly like that.
Senator Kamala Harris.
And I am prepared to march with you, to fight with you for the best of who we are and to successfully prosecute the case of four more years of Donald Trump. And against him.
She fucked that up. And
Vice
then she
President
giggled.
Joe Biden.
So, Mr. President, let's get something straight.
Yeah.
We love it. We are not leaving it. We are here to stay, and we're certainly not going to leave it to you.
Okay. There you go. A little mashup of the opening statements, such as they were. Again, just by way of review, overall, it was beat up on Joe Biden night. Not that he didn't deserve it. Kamala Harris hit him on health care. Cory Booker attacked him on the 94 crime bill. Julian Castro went after his immigration policy. And Kirsten Gillibrand tried to have her Kamala Harris moment in a convoluted accusation about his stance on women working outside the home. It didn't work. Tulsi Gabbard had some good moments. As she was joined by Cory Booker and Julian Castro as I think, and I'm going to duck for incoming, probably the three best on the stage last night. Yeah. Yeah. Again, I listened so you didn't have to. By the way, the next debates are September 12th and 13th from Houston on ABC. At this time, only seven candidates have qualified. Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, and Beto O'Rourke. Amy Klobuchar has qualified in polling, while Andrew Yang and Julian Castro have both reached the donor threshold. So there's a chance those three may make it in. And you know what? If that's it, I'm good. That's fine. Get rid of the rest of them and let's move on. I did get an email the other day from a listener, and I read all your emails. Nicole@NicoleSandler.com is the way to get a hold of me. I may not respond, I respond to most of them, but if I don't respond to you, it's not a slight, it's just that I'm slammed. But I got an email. I'm scrolling quickly to see if I can't find it. Did I save it in the saved file where I'm supposed to? No, that would make too much sense. Anyway, from a listener who chastised me a little bit for never talking about Tulsi Gabbard. And I promised him I would take note of Tulsi's performance in this. You know what? I bet I have it under sent because I responded and it's probably going to be easier to find him this way. No, that's a thank you for. Here it is. Okay. So it's listener Randy who wrote, "Hi, Nicole. I listen to podcasts for your program. I would like you to explain on your show, why not Tulsi Gabbard? Note, I am torn over Bernie Sanders and Tulsi and will probably go with Bernie, but Tulsi offers so much good, such as Medicare for All and no versions of it. Stopping the regime change wars, yes, voting system legislation that provides for printed out votes so the voting can be truly verified. Why not mention those wonderful things she wants done?" And here was my response. I said, well, she doesn't stand a chance in hell. She's a backbencher congresswoman with a very troubling background in a cult and a leader she still follows. It's true. Really, read the New York Magazine profile of her from like last month. It's disturbing. But then I said, I'd take another look at her policies if there was the slightest glimmer that she could take off, but she can't. And then I added, I want wonderful things done too. Doesn't mean I should be president. And he wrote back, on this issue, we disagree. The bottom line issue should address her policies like a do with Bernie. I think he's saying I should look at it anyway. With that said, I still like your show and will continue listening. Thank you, Randy. And I said, and that's okay. I'll take note of how she does in the debate. I promise I'll mention her in the recaps. And of course, I would have even without that email, because she actually did really well. In fact, she is very odd. Terry Taylor in the YouTube chat room said, I find Tulsi very odd. She is odd. She's a strange woman. And when I said she grew up in a strange cult, she did. It was a very anti-LGBT cult. Her family's still in it. She's still involved with it. It's troubling. Just as I have a problem with Mike Pence's weird religious peccadillos, so too do I with Tulsi Gabbard. There are enough things that give me pause about Tulsi that I don't endorse her. I don't endorse her candidacy, but that's fine because she's not going to win anyway. But she was the one who actually called out Kamala Harris. Let me see if I can't find this clip. I'm going out of order here. Okay, Tulsi. Here it is. So there, at this point in the debate, this is number 27, they were talking about criminal justice, right? Talking about criminal justice. This is interesting. Somebody, K-O-P-M-D-J in the YouTube chat room says, Tulsi is shilling for Biden racism and hit only Kamala. See, I love these theories of, you know, Tulsi's a Russian agent. No, I just think she is what she is. And I think she pointed out facts about Kamala Harris that needed to be brought out. So here's what Tulsi Gabbard said about Kamala Harris.
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting Black and brown people all across this country today. Mm. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana.
Uh-oh.
She blocked evidence.
She did.
She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. Eek. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator Harris.
Okay, so now Harris responds.
As the elected Attorney General of California, I did the work of significantly reforming the criminal justice system of a state of 40 million people, which became a national model for the work that needs to be done. And I am proud of that work. And I am proud of making a decision to not just give fancy speeches or be in a legislative body and give speeches on the floor, but actually doing the work of being in the position to use the power that I had to reform a system that is badly in need of reform. That is why we created initiatives that were about reentering former offenders and getting them counseling.
Thank you.
And because I know that criminal justice
system
is broken,
she constantly kept talking when they tried to shut her up.
To not only decriminalize, but legalize marijuana in the United States.
I want to bring Congresswoman Gabbard back in. Your response.
The bottom line is, Senator Harris, when you were in a position to make a difference and an impact in these people's lives, you did not. And worse yet, in the case of those who were on death row, innocent people. You actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is
That's
no
a hell of an
that.
Accusation.
And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
Ooh. Senator Harris.
And Harris laughs?
My entire career, I have been opposed, personally opposed to the death penalty, and that has never changed.
All right,
and
so that's how that went. Before we get Howie, because we're going to talk a bit about Medicare for All, I want to address that. As with the night before, that was the topic they opened with. Kamala Harris, despite having stated that she was with, you know, Bernie Sanders on Medicare for All, this week actually announced her new plan that she's calling Medicare for All, but it is Medicare Advantage for All. Medicare Advantage is the private insurance companies, the for-profit insurance companies administering your Medicare plan so they can turn you down. Medicare will not deny you something that the doctor ordered. The for-profit plan that administers that Medicare Advantage plan does, can, and will. So of all people, Kirsten Gillibrand was asked about Medicare for All, and she called out Kamala Harris for working with the for-profit insurance companies.
The truth about healthcare in America today is people can't afford it. They cannot afford. And the insurance companies for these plans that rely on insurance companies, I'm sorry, they're for-profit companies.
Yes, they are.
They have an obligation to their shareholders. They pay their CEO millions of dollars. They have to have quarterly profits. They have fat in the system that's real, and it should be going to healthcare. So let's not lose the forest for the trees. And last, let's not forget what the Republicans are doing.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, the Republicans and Trump, their whole goal is to take away your health care.
Thank you.
To make it harder for you to afford it,
Thank
even
you,
if
Senator
you have
Gillibrand.
Pre-existing conditions.
Senator Harris, your response.
In response to Senator Biden about the Affordable
she
Care
She just ignored Gillibrand,
It is important
right?
that you understand that our Medicare for All plan has actually, by the architect of the Obama
Listen
Affordable
to this.
Care Act, been described as one of the most effective ways to bring health care to all. Kathleen Sebelius.
What?
Has endorsed our plan as being something that will get us to where we need to go.
Oh, my God.
In terms of
So Kamala Harris is touting the fact that Kathleen Sebelius, who was Health and Human Services Director under Obama when the Affordable Care Act was launched, that she endorsed it? Do you remember the massive fuck-up that was the launch of the Affordable Care Act? Oh, and by the way, Kathleen Sebelius now works for one of those for-profit insurance companies that offers Medicare Advantage plans. Go figure. And who called her out on it? Tulsi Gabbard.
The reality is right now we don't have a healthcare system. We have a sick care system, and there are far too many people in this country who are sick and unable to get the care that they need because they cannot afford it. So the core of this problem is the fact that big insurance companies and big pharmaceutical companies who've been profiting off the backs of sick people have had a seat at the table writing this legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kamala Harris just talked about Kathleen Sebelius, who helped write her bill. This just pointed to the fatal flaw in her proposal. Sebelius works for Medicare Advantage, private insurance company, who will stand to profit under her plan. If we're seeking to really reform our healthcare system, we've got to shut out big insurance and big pharma out of the drafting process so they cannot continue to profit off the backs of the
Hello.
Sick people in this country who are searching and in desperate need of care.
Another good point, just saying. All right, we're going to take a pause in the recap to get Howie Klein on the line, because, you know, that's what we do on Thursdays at this time. We'll see with Howie. We may go through some more clips, or we may just continue tomorrow. Either way, we'll get through, because so much went on last night that it's pretty astounding. Now, for those of you who are new to the program, welcome. Hi, thank you. You know, we're now on at a new time on the Progressive Voices Network at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. So if you're listening for the first time, Howie Klein joins us every week. You'll meet him in a moment. He blogs at downwithtyranny.com, and he is one of the main people behind the Blue America PAC, who identifies, vets, and then encourages real progressives to run mostly for congressional seats and helps them raise money. So just know Howie's like me. He's a real progressive. And he's been critical of many in the Democratic leadership, as is called on in a democracy. Okay, so here, hit the intro for Howie.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
And don't forget about the Blue America Pack. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm surprisingly sane and not hungover after two nights of debates.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what everybody feels right now.
Uh-huh. Did you watch both nights?
I did up until I couldn't stand it anymore. So I put on the beginnings, and then towards the end of them, I would just go to my car and drive away. I couldn't take it. For one thing, CNN has these the moderators.
Oh, God.
Who are just trying to pitch fights.
Yes, that's all they wanted to do. Every question was framed in, aren't you afraid of so-and-so? Or how can you put up with this? Or what do you think of their horrible
idea? Well, look
idea?
What he said about this. He means you. How do you defend
right.
yourself?
Exactly.
And it's the DNC has got to talk to these TV stations and tell them they can't do that anymore. I mean, that's disgusting. I mean, were they doing that on MSNBC in the first round? I don't remember.
No, they just, wrote questions that sort of smeared Bernie Sanders, but they weren't trying to pit one against another for a caged match fight or something.
Right, that's what it was like. Right. I mean, I found that all of them were doing that last night and the night before, but the one that I really hated was Jake Tapper.
Oh, horrible.
He was like worse. I never had any negative feelings about that guy. I must have missed it because people have been telling me, because I tweeted about that, and people have been telling me, wake up. This is how he is all the time.
Yeah. Well, here's an example. Here's a question from the first night, from Tuesday night. Jake Tapper to John Hickenlooper. Just listen to the way Jake Tapper frames the question.
In poll after poll, Democratic voters say that they want a candidate who can beat President Trump more than they want a candidate who agrees with them on major issues. Governor Hickenlooper, you ran a Facebook ad that warned, quote, socialism is not the answer. The ad also said, quote, don't let extremes give Trump four more years. Are you saying that Senator Sanders is too extreme to beat President Trump?
Seriously? I mean, really?
Did he mention, I must have missed that. Did that ad mention Senator Sanders?
Yes. I don't think so. It was just socialism. It was fear-mongering over socialism. Jake Tapper threw Bernie in there and said, is he too extreme to win?
I know. And that's the media was all over that sort of thing today. Mm. In editorial after editorial, not to mention news coverage, it was like Biden won.
Really?
I think I left 5 minutes before it was over, and Biden wasn't winning in those.
No.
In that whole piece.
And how
he won the last 5 minutes, and I missed it.
Oh my God! And you missed Biden's big finish. Oh my God! You know how they do
right.
the closing right. statements.
I saw Biden's finish today.
Did you? We have a little. I have something that you may want. I won't play the whole thing, but we have a little musical treat for Joe's pushing people to whatever it was he was trying to push them to. Listen to this.
Go to Joe 30330. Joe.
Joe 303 30. Go to Joe 303 30.
So, and it goes like that. I just.
Oh, yes, please do send me that. Of course, you know that's right up my alley.
Yes, I do.
Apparently, he mixed up what the difference between a text and a
and an email, or a website. He didn't know. He said, "Just go to Joe 303 30," which doesn't mean anything. And the internet is like, what? And apparently, his staffers were really pissed because they were counting on that to build his list. And nobody was like, do what? Huh? Yeah.
It's kind of sad. You know, he's a doddering old man, and he doesn't understand things like this. He's been sheltered. People do things for him.
Yep.
He doesn't do things himself, so he doesn't understand them. Mm-hmm. I remember what a joke it was in George H.W. Bush. Didn't know how to check out of a grocery
right.
store.
Right. I remember that happens all the time. Yep. Well, you know, I don't understand how anyone could have watched that thing last night and come out of it saying, oh, Joe Biden was the winner. It's opposite world.
I know. I mean, when I saw that, I think it was in the Washington Post, and I thought to myself, like, what did I miss? When I walked out, is that what that happened? You know, what are they talking about? It's just more of the same old, you know, Bernie is a nightmare kind of scenario for these people. For whom Bernie will be a nightmare. That's the thing. I mean, Bernie doesn't deny it. All of these media people are millionaires. And yes, this is Bernie is not for them.
No. So who do you think did best last night? Let's start with last night because it's top.
No, I really felt it was the same thing both nights. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie won
Sanders.
Both nights.
I agree. I truly agree. I think they did so well the first night and that they backed each other up and didn't take the CNN bait, who was trying so hard to have them go at one another. I really think the way that we win, and I'm using the word we on purpose because I'm talking about progressives here, is that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have to have some kind of a deal together. That when the writing is on the wall and one of them is clear, is going to, you know, pull ahead of the other, that the one behind backs out and jumps in with the other one. I think they have to work together on this.
I've said all along that I think that that's what was going on. I mean, remember when I said that I've talked to their staffers both, you know, I'm friendly with staffers on both camps for years and years and years and years, long before they were backing Bernie or long before they were backing Elizabeth Warren. I've known these people.
Right.
And I went to them with this, what you just said, are they going to run as a team? And the staffers, all of them, unanimously told me, no, you're dreaming. It's not going to happen. And they're not lying to me.
Right.
These people believe it. I think that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren came up with this on their own. And it's not. And the staffers don't even know.
I hope
but
so.
But I really do believe that they recognize that it's not, in their cases, I really don't believe it's about ego. I mean, why does Joe Biden want to run? I mean, obviously, there's only one reason. It's his ego.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is an asshole. It's just about his ego. That's it. And that's about, I think I get the feeling that's all of them, but not Elizabeth Warren and not Bernie. It's not about ego. They want to run for the benefit of the country. That's first and foremost in their mind. I don't think it's anywhere in the mind of any of the other people. The other people is just about themselves. And that's why I'm drawn to the two of them. I hope and pray that they decide to run as a team. I don't really care which one is president and which one is vice president. I just want to see that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren team run as a ticket.
I would love to see it too. And here's where I play devil's advocate, and this is where politics comes in. And my first choice would be a Sanders-Warren-Warren-Sanders ticket, without a doubt. I think they need a person of color on the ticket. I just because of the electorate, because of the way things are in this country today. And at this point, judging from the last two nights, the one I'd pick for a vice presidential pick is Julian Castro.
Yeah.
I thought
Julian was good. Biden made a good point. Unfortunately, it was one of his only good points.
Yeah.
But he made a good point to when he said that Julian Castro was full of shit. That they worked together when he was in the cabinet, he was just another neoliberal, you know,
Right. But you know what? I have this exchange. Let me play it. Because Biden pushed back on Castro, which is talking about, you know, who was hit with the right-wing talking point about open borders. And he's like,
Before you put that on, uh-huh. Let me just say something.
Yeah.
When Biden gets attacked, no matter who, when in this case, when he was attacked by Castro, but any time he gets attacked by anybody, he doesn't even know how to defend himself against the attack. He doesn't know how to answer back because there is no answer. There's no answer to the stuff he gets attacked on. His record is his record. It stands.
Exactly.
So what he does instead is he attacks that person. So he doesn't defend what the person is talking mm-hmm. about. He doesn't say anything about his own record because he knows how bad it is. He just goes right after the person who makes the attack and tries to change the subject into them.
And
so
this
he
is,
did that a lot with
right.
Kamala, but he did it with anybody who went after him.
He did.
But do play this one of Julian Castro and him carrying on together.
Okay, here you go. Castro had already answered the question about he's not for open borders. He thinks that crossing the border should be a civil charge. Blah, 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 and Biden pushes back here.
With regard to the secretary's point, I already proposed and passed $750 million
Guatemala,
El Salvador, and Honduras to be able to change the circumstance why people fled in the first place.
Really?
In addition to that, we're in a circumstance where if, in fact, you say you can just cross the border, what do you say to all those people around the world who, in fact, want the same thing to come to the United States and make their case, but they don't, that they have to wait in line? The fact of the matter is you should be able to, if you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime. It's a crime, and it's not one that, in fact...
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
And then, you know, he's one thing about Biden, when they tell him his time's up, he just stops in mid-sentence, in mid-word. Right. And then
it's a nightmare for him to have to be speaking.
Oh, I know. He's like,
he is. And every single time they stop him, notice he was the only one.
Yep.
Now, some people like that. They say, oh, look how polite he is.
Right.
And he wipes his chin and everything.
But here's Castro.
Everyone else wants to be speaking. He wants them to stop him.
Right.
He would like it if he had half the time to speak.
You're right. But here's Castro. So one thing that wasn't in that clip, I guess I cut it out, when he said, I sat in all these cabinet meetings and never saw Secretary Castro, complain or push back on the policy. And here's what Castro said to that.
Secretary Castro, please respond.
First of all, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't. Let me just start out by answering that question. My immigration plan would also fix the broken legal immigration system because we do have a problem with that.
Okay, and it went on from there. But yeah, at least he addressed it. And he's like, I fixed my position. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. I thought it was strong both nights, or in the last debate and this one.
Yeah, Castro was pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's a smart guy. He really is. I as I've said before, I wish his mother was running instead of him. She's much better.
Who's his mother? I don't know this. Who's his mother?
His mother is awesome. His mother is the started La Raza.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
He comes from a much, much more radical background than he turned out to be. He and his brother both.
Hmm.
They came from the best of the best. And they, they went to Stanford and they,
mm-hmm.
These guys didn't even know how to speak Spanish. They learned, but they speak Japanese.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, the first night we had, it was definitely Bernie and Elizabeth. It was their night. Unfortunately, they also got Mayor Pete and Beto O'Rourke, who are interchangeable in my book. I wasn't overly impressed with either one, although Pete got off a few good lines. He's a really smart guy and he speaks well. I thought Beto O'Rourke was almost invisible.
He's been trained how to manipulate people. He worked at McKesson.
Yes.
And that's what McKinsey. That's what they do. They train their people how to manipulate with words. And he learned it well. And anything that comes out of his mouth is just I automatically take it as just nothing but bullshit. There's no sincerity there, nothing. But yes, he gets off some good lines because he's been trained to. I thought he was better than Beto, who was kind of pathetic.
Horrible.
In a way.
Horrible.
And lying as well. I mean, when he makes those cases about, and he's been doing it for years,
and tricked me for a very long time about campaign finance reform. We're talking about this rich boy who has his whole career has been financed by just a very few wealthy people. And, you know, he makes it sound like, you know, he's Mr. Campaign Finance Reform. It's
right,
bullshit.
Right. Well, you have a piece coming up that'll be going live at downwithtyranny.com right when the show ends at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific, titled Trump is Pretending He Wants to Finally Help with Out-of-Control Drug Prices. Yeah, if you believe that, I've got some land about a mile from here. A little swampy, but, you know, that's okay. Anyway, in it, you talk about dealing with Medicare and all that. You did mention, you quote Pete, Mayor Pete, from Tuesday night, where he got off a great line. Should I play the clip?
Oh, please.
Okay, so this is Pete Buttigieg from the debate on Tuesday night.
We cannot have a vision that amounts to back to normal. It's the only reason we got this president is that normal didn't work. We have to be ready to take on this president. And by the way, something that hasn't been talked about as much tonight, take on his enablers in Congress. You know, when David Duke ran for Congress, ran for governor, the Republican Party 20 years ago ran away from him. Today, they are supporting naked racism in the White House, or at best silent about it. And if you are watching this at home, and you are a Republican member of Congress, consider the fact that when the sun sets on your career, and they are writing your story of all the good and bad things you did in your life, the thing you will be remembered for is whether in this moment with this president, you found the courage to stand up to him or you continue to put party over country.
And actually, Howie, you referenced that quote in the post that went live this morning at 5 a.m. that hard to say who would be most likely to kill Medicare in 2021, Trump or Biden, but I'd guess Biden.
Yes. Well, I don't know who writes Mayo Pete's stuff, but that right. was a good line.
It was a good line.
He fit that in well. It was obviously that was something that he had rehearsed.
Naked racism. Probably
focus group tested. You saw that the focus group testing was good. The audience responded really, really well to a couple of times. They broke out into cheers. So he knows how to do that kind of stuff. That is, I don't know if that's what makes a president. And in fact, I don't think it is. But in terms of Medicare, I've been doing my research lately. I'm not even sure which post or combination of posts it's in.
Yeah,
but,
oh,
I mean,
it's,
I do this
in the next
kind
one.
Of like because I just enjoy doing it and then get it into posts. But Medicare, it took a very, very long time to pass. We just had the 54th anniversary of Medicare last Tuesday. LBJ signed it in 1965. But it didn't just pop out of nowhere in 1965. It's been something that progressives have been working on since 1915. That's when they started a coordinated effort to pass what became Medicare. And from 1915 to 1965, it was a battle. It was our conservatives who kept it from happening, and the AMA. But let's leave the AMA out of this for this discussion that we're having.
Okay.
But because when it came to Congress or to the state legislatures, where they started in the state legislatures, it was a combination of Republicans and, although they didn't call them this at the time, Blue Dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to have other names for them, like, you know, Bourbon Republicans and Bourbon Democrats and Southern Democrats. I mean, they'd call them Southern Democrats, even though some of them weren't from the South.
Right.
Most of them were, though. But they were all conservative Democrats. And in those days, they would team up with the Republicans. When I was a kid, this was before the election of 1964. That was the election that changed everything. But before then, Congress, even though there were Democratic majorities, Congress could never get anything done progressive because Congress was really not ruled by the Democrats. It was ruled by a combination of the conservative Southern, mostly Democrats, and the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to stop anything progressive. The committee chairs were almost all a bunch of these Southern Democrats. Very, very, very conservative, very anti-integration, for example. And then in 1964, there was a landslide. There was, you know, because the Republicans foolishly ran an extremist, Barry Goldwater, although he's not as extreme as what they run these days, and people were revolted by it. And LBJ was reelected by a landslide, and a Democratic Congress came in that was not controlled by the Southern Democrats. Suddenly the Southern Democrats realized they were not in charge anymore. So that was a really good thing. And that's how Medicare passed the following year. Hmm. And the Democrats have been trying, the progressives had been trying to pass Medicare, and they were willing to compromise. They had offered the conservative Democrats some compromises. And the conservative Democrats, thinking they'd be in control forever, they turned down the compromises. So when they no longer had the power, the progressives said, screw you. And they withdrew the compromises, some of them. Some mm-hmm. of them stayed in. Mm-hmm. But the big ones that the conservatives should have taken from their own perspective, they were withdrawn. So I was happy to learn that and to see some of the, I read in great depth about, some of the manipulations and back and forth that was going on. One of them, this is stuff I remember from my childhood that people might not even have heard of. But one of the big time, very, very, very important Southern Democrats who was in charge of a lot of stuff was a guy named Wilbur Mills. So Wilbur Mills was the chairman of the House Oversight Committee. So he's a guy from Arkansas, a conservative Democrat. Like many Democrats, like many members of Congress right to this day, he was an alcoholic. They're all a bunch of alcoholics. Whenever one of them gets caught drunk, and I talk to people who I know on Capitol Hill, they always tell me the same thing. Oh, everyone is drunk. They're all drunk. They're drunk all the time. All the members are drunk. Now, I mean, I talk to members of Congress who don't drink or who aren't drunk or who wouldn't think of getting drunk on the job. But, they tell me that their colleagues are all walking around drunk all the time.
Wow.
So anyway, Wilbur Mills was a drunkard and a really bad one and running around with hookers and doing all sorts of crazy things. And so he was the one that was keeping Medicare from progressing. I mean, at one point before this big landslide that I talked about, it had to pass his committee first before it was going to get to the floor. And it only lost in his committee by one vote. I mean, it was definitely getting closer and closer so that it was going to go to the floor and probably pass. But it took that landslide to not just pass it, but to take out a lot of the worst parts that that people felt had to go in it. The thought that the progressives had when they passed it was it would be a first step.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very well planned out. The first step was going to, because it was the easiest, the first step was going to be, let's insure the elderly.
Right.
And there were a lot of ways why that was the easiest. But then the second step that was supposed to happen right after was that then we'll do kiddie insurance. So it first do the elderly, and then it would go to children. And then after people were used to that, then they would make it universal. So they were planning on Medicare for All from the very, very beginning. And it's amazing to me that you still have these goddamn conservative Democrats, whether it's Biden or Delaney or Frackenlooper mm-hmm. or Tim Ryan, who's a fool. Yeah, none of these people have a clue about any of this stuff. They don't understand. They're just the same conservative Democrats who work with the Republicans to stop anything that helps the working class.
Right.
That's who they are.
Yes.
I mean, you think maybe Tim Ryan wouldn't be in that camp? I mean, it turns out that idiot is actually a co-sponsor of Medicare for All, but they don't even understand what they're doing. They don't even understand what Medicare for All is. You hear them debating on the stage, and you realize they don't know what Medicare is. They literally don't know what it is. They're talking about unions have worked so hard to get coverage. Okay, well, that's true, but the coverage isn't as good as what Medicare for All would be. So what the hell are you talking about? I mean, I know I've said this on your show, and I don't want to drive people crazy, but in case someone didn't hear it, I just want to say again that because of my previous job at Warner Brothers as one of the presidents of a division, I had the best, and that's how it was defined. The presidents and chairmen of the companies were given, as part of their contracts, the best health insurance that was
possible,
available on
right.
the private market.
Exactly.
So I guarantee you it's better than what any union has managed to squeeze out of their employers. And when I had to give up my plan and go to Medicare, I was really afraid that I was going to just die because I wasn't going to have good coverage.
And what I found out immediately was it wasn't as good as coverage as the private insurance. Mm-hmm. It was better.
Right.
It was better. Better. It's better. They can't get that through their heads. Medicare is better than not what the unions have. It's better than that. The best of the best. No one has as good health insurance as what Time Warner was giving their presidents and chairman.
Right.
And Medicare for All is better. And no one knows that. Even I didn't know it when I was the president of Reprise. I didn't know that I had the best
health insurance.
Medicare was better than what I had.
Right.
And none of these people know it. And you think that maybe these idiot congressmen would know it, but they don't.
They should. And in fact, you put it to the test because, Howie, you know, I was talking earlier today is World Lung Cancer Day. And it'll be 3 years ago, August 30th, that I had my surgery for lung cancer. Unfortunately, I had fortunately, I had insurance through the Affordable Care Act. So I had coverage, thank goodness, because without the Affordable Care Act, I wouldn't have had that. But it was constant fighting with the insurance company to get them to approve every little thing the doctors ordered. On the other hand, you fought cancer, too, while you're on Medicare, and you said they were great.
You never even spoke to them. Even when I had my great health insurance from Warner Brothers, it was a fight every time, just like it was for you. They're always fighting with you about it.
Everything.
And you're trying to get well, and they're like fighting with you about every little thing of it that they don't want to cover. And yet, when I at the $2 million mark, I stopped looking at my bills. But I never got one call from the health insurance coverage challenging what the doctor wanted. Not a call.
Wow.
What the doctor wanted is what you got. Now, Medicare Part D, I just want to make clear, that's different from Medicare. That came later. That was passed under Bush. And that's Republican Medicare. That's what Republican health care is, what Medicare Part D. When Bernie becomes president and his position on Medicare goes in, the first thing they do is get rid of Medicare Part D, which should have been not one Democrat voted for it, by the way.
Yep.
That was completely passed by the Republicans.
Yep.
Nancy Pelosi tried to get it better when she became speaker, but it still sucks. That's where drug coverage comes from, and it stinks. But that's when I talk about Medicare, I don't mean Part D. That's
right.
Something separate.
But there's something going on that a lot of people don't know about. And I wonder if you do, Howie. Now, with Medicare, I'm not on Medicare yet. I still have, unfortunately, 5.5 years to go. My husband is, though. And when we were faced with, Medicare covers 80%. So you need a supplemental plan. Your choices are a Medicare gap policy or a Medicare Advantage plan. Because we're really financially strapped. We're broke right now. We went for the Medicare Advantage because we had no other choice. The Medicare gap plan is the way to go because it's not going through a for-profit insurance company. It's going through the Medicare system. And do you know that unless you are now enrolled in a Medicare a gap plan, you're not going to be able to purchase one in the future after, I believe, this year?
Well, I didn't know it because that's what I'm in.
Well, you have it, so you'll be able to get it. But somebody new coming into Medicare, that will not be available to them. They're pushing them all into Medicare Advantage. The difference with Medicare...
Unless Bernie becomes president,
exactly.
It's all moot.
There you go. I just need to raise that red flag, and it's a topic we will get into in depth in the coming weeks because it's that important. Anyway.
The one other thing that I wanted to say before we go, and I know that you're clock is running out.
We're out of time.
Is that the Democrats also have always been trying to, or the progressives, I should say, have always been trying to push that Medicare cover dental and vision
Advantage
and hearing
does.
Problems yeah. and for a long time also mental problems. And the Republicans and the conservative Democrats like Biden have always stood in the way of that as well.
Yep. And here we go. It's more of the same. Anyway, Howie Klein, we are over time. I just needed to make that point. Thank you, as always. People can find you at downwithtyranny.com, where you can read all those posts I talked about. And the naked racism quote is in one of them. Thank you, Howie, as always. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye. Okay. So with that, we are way out of time. Like I said, we're late. I'm going to have to edit this for the podcast, for Progressive Voices, where it'll air at 5 Eastern. Thanks, everyone. I will be back tomorrow to finish the recap and talk to John Nichols of The Nation and see how we move this nation forward. As always, I didn't play the theme music. As always, thank you for listening. Until tomorrow. Keep the faith, baby. Bye.